At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the DD Geopolitics live stream. I'm here with Chris. He's in Moscow. He has snow, and I do not.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm good. I'm bitter. I don't have any snow, but I'm good. I'm good. Some of our viewers might have noticed we are working our way through Professor Zhang's entire lecture series now. And so after the stream, we will be talking about the sort of evolution of evil. That should be fun to put you to sleep, I guess, with nightmares. But yeah, it's good. And this week is not only New Year's, but we will have our first discussion of our newly consecrated, baptized, whatever, book club. So we're starting off with the shock doctrine, start them off slow. And so we're going to try to get through that in 3 weeks, which is a very easy read. And then we're going to move on to a piece to end all piece. But yeah, so guys, please, if you want to join, just find me on Twitter or find anybody on Twitter. But yeah, we'll be having a space after this about Dr. Zhang's sort of how evil took over the world, I guess. And Chris is a Fed.
Classic. Everybody has their conspiracy theories. Maybe they should let the Russian government know. Maybe they're not too smart. Maybe these
when they call me a Fed, and I'm like, I wish, could you let the United States government know so I could stop getting detained every time I come back? Like, could you let them know?
Homeland Security, you know, intel reports and things like that. And then coming here and I don't know, you know, strange things.
Right now I have fake teeth, apparently. Apparently I am sponsored by like somebody in Russia. I'm like part of this like Candace Owens Dugan sort of ring, and I used that money to get fake teeth, which guys, I don't have any fake teeth. So
listen, we might as well just, somebody needs to call us reptilians or something like that at this point, you know. Come on.
Yeah, sorry about the dog, guys. I don't know what she's crazy today. But yeah, oh look, Mario's here and Nick. Wow, what a pleasure. Maybe I'll make one of them do my New Year's Eve stream. By the way, guys, on New Year's, we'll probably have two streams for you because if you don't know, New Year's is one of the biggest, if not the biggest holiday of the year in Russia.
So it is the biggest.
Yeah, this time of the day is not going to work for Chris.
No, I will be drinking vodka and listening to President Putin's speech at midnight.
So we will have a special Russia edition. Maybe Mario can join for that. We'll try to have one for the Americanders. Maybe Nick will join me for that. We'll see. See how we're like volunteering people to do our streams with us. There you go.
That's it. There we are.
But anyway, we'll go off to someone with a lot less patience than I guess our viewers and the people that we make stream with us is Putin. For a Russia-Ukraine update, it seems Putin is losing his patience, but I mean, haven't we been losing our patience for a while? But I guess let's see what he has to say, and then I'll get your thoughts, Chris.
Мы видим, на Западе тоже появились умные люди, которые рекомендуют киевским властям принять достойные условия завершения конфликта. Предоставляют хорошие базовые условия для обеспечения безопасности Украины на длительную историческую перспективу. Условия восстановления отношений с Российской Федерацией и восстановления экономики Украины. Но мы видим, что и сегодня, к сожалению, главари киевского режима не спешат решать этот конфликт мирными средствами. Я говорил об этом уже год назад, выступая в Министерстве иностранных дел. Но сегодня, судя по вашим докладам, судя по темпам, которые мы наблюдаем на линии боевого соприкосновения, наша заинтересованность в выводе украинских воинских формирований из занимаемых ими пока территорий фактически сводится к нулю. По разным совершенно соображениям. И если киевские власти не желают закончить дело миром, мы решим все стоящие перед нами задачи в ходе специальной военной операции вооруженным путем.
Well, you have any thoughts on Putin in uniform?
Well, Putin in uniform, of course, commander-in-chief, head of the armed forces. And, of course, having come back from the Donbass now and having seen things both in Donetsk and in Zaporozhye, we're on the move. We're on the move. Russian military is advancing. Of course, there's a lot of questions about Kupiansk and Pokrovsk. They're the subject of intense scrutiny online. And all sorts of reports. I won't necessarily comment. I have friends and contacts on the ground, on the front, and the situation is highly volatile and fluid. A lot of heavy fighting in a lot of different directions. I will say this: Ukrainian forces are feeling the pinch finally, and really suffering tremendous defeats up and down the line of contact. That doesn't mean, of course, that Russian forces are successful in all operations. What it does mean is that overall, territory is being seized at an enormous pace. And we're talking about hundreds of square kilometers in short amount of months. And that's pretty big when you think about it. So especially since this war is not just the Russian Federation versus Ukraine's military, but the Russian Federation versus all of the combined West. Is Ukrainian army is getting US intel, German intel, French intel, British intel, the weapon systems, everything, you name it. And we've seen, of course, President Putin escalating the military conflict in terms of targeting critical infrastructure to the military and technological apparatus of the Ukrainian regime. So the factories, the power substations and things like that, certainly it has an impact on civilian life. But the fact that only two were killed, and as some people have noted, including friends of the show who are journalists, they were killed by drones that were shot down and then entered into apartment complexes. The government of Russia doesn't target civilian infrastructure or civilian residential buildings. They target infrastructure that doesn't have civilians around, right? So like power stations, factories, drone factories, weapons factories, military depots, things like that. So people are like, oh my God, Russia's targeting in the biggest assault. Yeah, two people were killed from a drone that got off course and was shot down. So I just want people to understand, if we're talking about hundreds of drones and two people killed and anti-aircraft being engaged, I just want to let people know that obviously we're losing patience, but we're not committing war crimes, not like the Zionist regime and others who have committed mass atrocities, including the Ukrainian regime. So just to let people know, even the Western press is saying this to be the case.
Well, here's some strikes on the energy, some precision strikes on energy facilities in Kyiv. Aftermath in Kyiv is pretty dark. I love those maps. Those are my favorite maps. I post them just as a troll.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. I mean, we're talking about a heavy, heavy bombardment of critical military infrastructure and energy infrastructure. I mean, it's unbelievable. And the precision of these strikes is at the top notch, And as some people are noting in the comments, and it's absolutely true, Russia has been extremely restrained in this special military operation because Russians do not see Ukrainian people as an enemy. They see them as brothers and sisters, right? They see them as part of the same nation in terms of history, culture, tradition, religion, you name it. But they see the Ukrainian regime as being imposed against the will of the Ukrainian people. So they don't target Ukrainian civilians. It's Ukrainian military that targets civilians in the Donbass, that targets civilians in Kursk Oblast, that targets civilians with drones on other parts of the Russian Federation. They're the ones committing terrorism. So I just want people to understand that this is a two different operations in terms of their overall perspectives to the conflict. One is about liberation. The other one is about destroying an entire people in whole or in part. And that's the Ukrainian regime. They don't want Russian speakers. They don't want Russian language. They don't want the Orthodox Church under Moscow Patriarchate. They want to remove any semblance of any connection with the historic Rus and the Russian people, even though there was the center right there in that territory. And I think that it's very important for people to remain vigilant about the propaganda that's coming out that continues to try to pin these brotherly nations, these same people against one another.
Well, in addition to the precision strikes from the air, there is a ton of movement on the ground. I'm going to Gliapol, I think. And here's some scenes from that battlefront. Is the opening of the Zaporozhye front. Huge moves. And then here we go in Mirnograd, or Dmitriov, however you like to call it. Santa liberated Mirnograd. We'll be right back. I get a little misty-eyed at that video.
Новым годом, блин. I love it.
You saw, well, Dan Moreau's but you saw that Santa, well, Dan Moroza was liberating the settlements. Those civilians refused to evacuate with the Ukrainians. They wanted to wait for the Russians. And that was the celebration afterwards. So very, very touching. But yeah, there's a lot of movement on the ground among the troops. There's also a lot of movement on the ground with the politicians. I don't have the video, but fleeing to Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Timur Mindich has gone. He's fled to Israel. I think that a lot of viewers will recall the Putin saying, you know, the presidents really aren't in control. It's the guys with the black suitcases and the hats.
Yeah.
And when Chris just says, you know, the Russia is fighting all of the West. And that also includes Israel. So, you know, I'm trying to like have on people understand there's a lot of connections and synapses between these two. Why is Israel giving, this is also something that we talked about. Israel is giving asylum to war criminals. People who've committed crimes against the American taxpayer, but I'm sure there are people that Russia would have been interested in. Israel is giving them asylum. And at the same time, Bibi has the audacity to go live and say, I talk to Putin every day. We're good friends.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So there you go. I just wanted to kind of point that out. Also, according to sources, aka the producer, the meeting between Trump and Zelensky is over. If we have any outcomes or any minutes, we'll get you guys those. Someone in our viewers pointed out, also interesting, is that Bibi and Zelensky are in town at the same time. So we keep an eye on that. Keep your eyes on that. Another place where these kind of synapses collide is in Syria. Over the week, we had a major terrorist attack on the day after Western Christmas. So December 26th, the devastating explosion ripped through the Imam Ali bin Abi Talib Mosque, which is a predominantly Alawite neighborhood. It killed at least 8 and wounded 18 others. An Islamist militant group called Saraya Ansar al-Sunnah claimed responsibility, labeling Alawites apostates. Audio and video speeches circulated today from Sheikh Ghazal, head of the Supreme Alawite Islamic Council, asking for peaceful protests and a human flood across areas from noon until 5 p.m. today. So that is over, but I believe this footage is from today, where violence also broke out as Jolani's forces went there to provoke the situation. Let's take a look.
Yeah.
Allahu Akbar. Hi, Shabab, kulla hamlat silah wajad. Allahu Akbar.
الآن القوات العسكرية تدخل دوار الأزهري فضل اشتباك.
What do you make of all of this? It's always in the Alawite and Christian areas, sort of the coastal areas, the areas of Russian influence a little bit, I guess I would say, or the last kind of strongholds of Russia. There's always violence in the minority sectors, but not the other minorities, not the Druze. Not anymore. There was. But there's not massive massacres of Druze or Kurds, but there's massive massacres of Alawites and Christians.
We are seeing the beginning of, well, we already have seen it. So it's the beginning. It really is the escalation of sectarian violence in the country. We saw months ago the massacre of Alawites. By the way, the numbers aren't for sure, but we're saying 15 to 20,000 were killed. I mean, those are huge numbers. I mean, we're talking about people refer to Srebrenica and things like that with less people and call it a genocide. imagine. Wow. But the West has been silent about this, by the way. The West has been silent because Alawites equals Assad. Who cares? Plus, most of them collaborated with the Russian army, with Hezbollah, mm-hmm. with the force from General Soleimani. So, you know, or Fatah Mayoun brigade. So, oh, who cares, you know, after that. But the problem here is the following. Druze are aligning themselves either separately and independently or with Israel. Alawites see their salvation as being a form of autonomy and trying to rely on Russia for protection. Christians are going to go that direction with them, wherever they can, to find some level of autonomy and protection. The Kurds, the SDF, which of course is a mixed society, but the Kurds in leadership, they understand that this deadline is almost come and gone at this point.
What? 2 days? So, 3 days?
2 days. So there has been no unity between, there has been no giving up of arms and integration to the Syrian army. So what we're going to see is an escalation on that front. We've already seen massive troop and armor mobilizations, artillery placement on the border between territory held by Damascus and territory held by the SDF. We could see by New Year's or a little bit thereafter, the beginning of an open war. If that happens, there are two scenarios, I think. Actually, there might be more, but there are two predominant ones, I would say. One, the SDF goes full balls to the wall, as we say, and goes towards the liberation of Damascus itself. So the SDF has a full mobilization in the country. The PKK cadre that are left in Syria, and many of them left Kandil and Gare and went into Syria, they'll mobilize, and then they'll have about, I would say, estimates 30 to 60,000 battle-ready troops ready to go and ready to march. Now, they have a lot of experience. Right? They have a lot of experience. They have equipment from the Americans and whatever's left from the Syrian Arab Army. So they have both comm block and Western weaponry. They're ready to go. Now, they lack one critical thing, air power. That air power is going to come with Turkish involvement. So if Turkey gets involved, I don't think SDF has a chance. If Turkey doesn't get involved, they have a chance to unite with the Alawites and with the Druze and to overthrow Damascus. I think the more likely scenario is that Turkey is going to convince the Americans that the SDF pose a threat to the new government in Damascus. The Saudis and the Gulf states will say that Damascus's leadership under Jolani is critical and they don't want to see the Kurds in power because it's a whole different alliance structure. And therefore, you're going to see once again a scenario like Halabja 2.0, where you're going to see massacres of Kurds and other minorities in the north, and the West is going to be silent and actually provide the arms and the support and the intelligence to the Syrians to do it. Now, if that ends up happening, the Alawites do have a chance to carve out a Latakian state if they want, but it would require full Russian support and military power. The question is if the Russians can convince the Turks and Damascus to basically carve out this like the Golan and let the rest of the chips fall. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't think that that's a possibility, but it is in the ether. People do talk about it. But in any case, we are not at the end of violence in Syria. We are really entering a new phase of sectarian violence and I think a destabilization in the country.
Now, we have conflicting narratives, right? We have the sort of Tom Barak. Oh, I lost Chris. We sort of have the Tom Barak United States narrative where, you know, Jolani's a... Here he is. There you go. So we have
Zionists for this and the Turkish intelligence. I don't know what happened. It just
Zio attack, as Sully would say, Zio, bro. So we kind of have these conflicting narratives, right? We have the Tom Barak sort of Trump narrative where it's like Jolani's a good leader. He's doing a good job. He's got a hard time. And then we have what's actually going on, which is the destruction of, once again, religious minorities, the Alawites, who Sunnis see them as Shia, but Alawites themselves say, no, we are a completely separate thing. So they are a separate sect, but Sunnis see them as Shia. And then obviously you have the Christians. Is this, since the violence is being conveniently ignored, my opinion is that it's a feature, not a bug. Is that they desire this, Israel and the United States desire for this to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the Alawites are seen as a Iranian proxy. Mm-hmm. Because under Assad's government, the Alawites were basically the Alawite supreme leadership was given status as Muslims under Iran's supreme leader and were basically recognized by the Shia leadership as being Muslims themselves. Because before that, they weren't considered necessarily Muslims. And there was always this kind of sectarianism, at least in more modern history. Now, of course, they're seen as Muslims by the Shia world, but not by the Sunni world. And of course, that means that de facto, they are seen as proxies of Iran and the axis of resistance. So they're a remnant of the axis of resistance in that way. Right. Therefore, America and Israel and Turkey say, just keep going at them, right? And try to humble them so much that they keep their heads down and they don't bother anybody. Or they begin to emigrate out of Syria, which would be the ideal scenario for them.
Right. And also this serves to further destroy the Orthodox belt. We've touched on that so many times. I mean, pulling the Christians out of there is the end of pretty much Christians in the Levant. Well, you have the Lebanese, but it's like maybe almost the final nail in the coffin of Christians in the Middle East.
So Syria is home to one of the ancient sees of Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, it's the Patriarchate of Antioch, but they are based in Damascus. This is one of the five sees. For all of you religious scholars, you know, Rome, Constantinople, Antioch, Jerusalem, Alexandria. Alexandria, Jerusalem, and Antioch were historically under Islam until 1453, when Constantinople also fell under Islam. Now you have Alexandria, Antioch, and Constantinople under Islam. Jerusalem under a Jewish supremacist state, and of course Rome as now outside of that unity, that pentarchy, that original after the Great Schism. So you have these four ancient sees, all under non-Christian majority powers. Three of them Muslim, one of them Jewish. And it's just it's crazy that those four sees are actually at risk of disappearing. The newer sees in Orthodoxy, Moscow, Belgrade, Sofia, and there are others, of course, Cyprus, Greece as an autonomous church, autocephalous church. They are okay because they're in Orthodox majority countries. Also, also in Bucharest, right, in Romania for the Romanian Patriarchate, the Georgian Patriarchate in Tbilisi. But those churches they are newer. The ancient ones now are at risk of disappearing altogether. It's very dangerous. Very dangerous. We could see the end of Christianity in the region in the next century, I think.
I'm going to try in our book club to get us to read. There is a book called Forsaken. It's about the Christians in the Middle East and also Chaos and Caliphate, which covers the destruction of the Christians in the Middle East. But it actually covers them from the appropriate angle of that it was something that was planned and that it was encouraged by the Americans and the Israelis.
And the British, by the way, the British,
Anglos. I should just say Anglos instead of.
Yeah, the Anglo-Saxon world. Listen, the Anglo-Saxon world has never had any soft spot except for the Methodists. None of and a little bit of the Anglicans. The more Protestant, like Calvinist tradition, absolutely hates Orthodox Christianity and Catholicism. They don't even see them necessarily as Christians. Okay, in ecumenical like gatherings, they say, "Oh yes, we're all Trinitarian Christians." But in reality, you know the history. When Calvinism became a big deal in Switzerland, they burned Catholic churches, destroyed icons of Christ and the Virgin Mary. They went hardcore. And so that legacy, that Protestant spirit that is very much tied to the United Kingdom and then the United States, that was at the push. They basically see Eastern Christians as sort of like idolaters, right? They're like, these bearded ones with lots of incense and icons. Forget them, right? Now, of course, people, a minority are converting and they see Orthodoxy as a bastion of traditionalism. And of course, I mean, it's remained pretty much unchanged. But the real ideologues and real fanatics, they want to see them gone too. They want to see Orthodox gone too. They see them as not even in the realm that they're in. They see them as, they're sola scriptura people. These people with tradition and big clerics and big crosses and gold. And no, we don't need any of that, right? So you're absolutely correct when you are saying this. Absolutely correct. And worst of all, the Americans and the British saw themselves as new crusaders. But this time, to liberate the Holy Land, for the Jewish state, which would bring about the messianic apocalyptic moment.
The Protestant Crusades, the evangelical.
The Protestant Crusades, right? The Protestant Crusades, very interesting. And by the way, I argue in my history courses, there is overlap with the imagery of the Ku Klux Klan and the British in the 19th and 20th century in the Middle East, right? Where they dress themselves up as crusaders, like they, you know, self-orientalize themselves as sort of these crusading knights going to the Holy Land. And that's what it is to embark on this crusade, racial purity, spiritual purity. And ultimately, that purity is very much anti-Semitic. It's pro-Zionist anti-Semitic. Because for them, the Jewish state is a means to an end. The end being half of the Jewish people convert to Christianity, the other half are annihilated and burn in hell forever. Oh, good deal if you're anti-Semitic. Of course you're going to support the Jewish state. It's going to usher in the moment, right? So that's, I want people to understand that they're not necessarily friends of Israel because they love the Jewish people. They love the Jewish people because that will bring the Messiah back. And then they'll be forced to accept Jesus. And if they don't accept Jesus, well, fuck them.
Fuck them.
That's it. That's what they think.
Really quick, guys. So the press conference for the post meeting is coming up. So when that comes on, we will add it to the stage and we will react to you guys in live. If it's still on, if it's not on by the time we're ready to wrap up, then we'll just wrap, I guess. I don't know. I bet it's a nothing burger. I can't see them coming out with anything that's important or that changes the course of anything on the ground, but we'll give it a shot anyway. We'll give it the old college try. Well, from one sectarian violence to more sectarian violence, or I don't even know what you want to call this, but over to Nigeria, which was bombed over the weekend, over the week, sorry, the holiday. They're calling it the Christmas strike.
Wow.
Yeah. So they launched quote-unquote precision airstrikes, primarily Tomahawk missiles from naval vessels in the Gulf of Guinea against two ISIS-linked camps in the Bauni Forest, Tangaza, and Sokoto State, which is northwestern Nigeria. It's up against the border with Niger. They said, I believe Trump said it was amazing. They viciously killed so many ISIS militants. Amazing strikes. You know, we're the best. We're the best. The Nigerian said, what the hell? What are you bombing? They said, thank God no one was even killed.
Yep.
What the hell is going on? Then I went and looked. And they have about a 20 to 25% fail rate with these Tomahawks. They're just throwing like old shitty ordnance at farmers and villagers. Look, it's just a village in the middle of nowhere.
It looks like a field, like something that you, what are they doing out there?
With a 20 to 25% fail rate. So now there's unexploded ordnance all over the, I don't know, wilderness, Sahara, I don't know, in Nigeria. It's just one mess after another. One mess
after your tax dollars, ladies and gentlemen, your tax dollars at work. Laying on the
floor. I mean, look at what they've done, right? They've got Nicki Minaj went to the UN. This is how the propaganda is working here. Nicki Minaj is our spokesperson for the Nigerian Christians. Plus the whole MAGA cult that does their whole, you don't care about the Christians in Nigeria. Nicki Minaj goes to the UN. Then Nicki Minaj all of a sudden goes to TPUSA.
Oh.
That's an interesting thing. TPUSA is a money laundering scam for Zionists. So it's just that's pushing it.
That wasn't on my bingo card.
Right, exactly. So you got to ask yourself, why is she doing that? After she's a spokesperson for the Nigerian Christians and goes to the UN. Seriously. I mean, for all intents and purposes, TPUSA is a Jewish platform. This is just a Zionist platform.
Well, after the unfortunate and reprehensible death of Charlie Kirk.
Exactly.
There you go.
The coup. So I guess the president said Tinubu, who is also a heroin trafficker from Chicago, that we put in power. He like thanked us and said, sure. And then, yes, Chai, she's Trini, I believe. She's Trini, Trinidadian citizen. Yeah. She's an illegal citizen. She's an illegal immigrant in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, this is all. So again, Kofi is in involved in the propaganda for this. Evangelicals are involved in the propaganda for this, but it's just more recycled Islamophobia, which also serves the purpose of Israel and Zionism.
Oh, and we'll talk about that in Africa.
In Africa. Well, let's keep going. So the big news of this week is the recognition of Somaliland. I hate the name of this state. I love Somalia. That's a great name. Somaliland? I hate it. Anyway, BB wants to start wars everywhere, so here we go.
Mr. President.
Mr. Prime Minister.
It's good to talk to you, Adab. Before anything else, I want you to know that I'm signing now, as we speak, Israel's official recognition of Somaliland and its right of self-determination. Our friendship is seminal and historic. So I'm very, very happy, and I'm very proud of this day, and I want to wish you and the people of Somaliland the very, very best there. I think this will be a great opportunity for expanding our partnership. We intend to work together with you on economic fields, on agriculture, in the fields of social development, all the things that we hope we can assist you, and we obviously believe in this friendship. And I have to tell you that there's a lot of excitement here in Israel as well, so I want to use this opportunity, sir, to invite you to an official visit to Israel at your convenience, and I hope very much to see you here soon. This is a wonderful day. It's a historic day. And of course, I'll communicate to President Trump your willingness and desire to join the Abraham Accords. So thank you, Mr. President. Please convey my best regards and the best regards of the people of Israel to the people, to the independent people of Somaliland. Thank you, sir.
That's a great event, a great historical day. Big Five is here. The other group is the chairman of the party and the vice president. And key officials are here. Mr. Prime Minister, I accepted the invitation. I'm ready as soon as possible for the arrangement that can be made.
We shall arrange it very soon. And please convey my warmest regards to your colleagues and to the people. Thank you, sir. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Prime Minister.
Thank you. See you soon in Jerusalem. Next year in Jerusalem, we say. That's a few days from now. Thank you, sir.
Sure, I will be glad to be in Jerusalem as soon as possible.
Thank you. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Obviously announced on Twitter. I want you guys to take a look at the map. So,
would you look at that geography?
Correct. So it's not where it's location, 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 but a little bit of background. So Somaliland is a de facto independent entity that declared its autonomy from Somalia in 1991 after the collapse of the regime. It operates as a semi-functional state and kind of takes advantage of the Somalian instability that we obviously have a heavy, heavy hand in.
Black lockdown.
Correct. Which is a terrible adaptation of what actually happened. But right. I also want to let people know that even this, so if you see that Somalia, and I was talking to someone before the stream even, I was like, look at the Horn of Africa. When you look, there's a really great book called The Revenge of Geography. And he uses the example of Central Asia, but it also works here. When you look at a map and you're like, these borders are retarded. It's usually by design. People fight. He uses the Central Asian where, you know, the corkscrew in the middle of the stands. He uses that argument. He's like, if the border makes no sense, it was probably made by a colonial entity in order to continue the destabilization or the instability of the region. So we have Somaliland, which is already a bizarrely shaped state created. And then you see Eritrea and Djibouti right there. All three of those cut off the sea access to Ethiopia. So that's a whole other history lesson in and of itself. So obviously you can see that this is a place that's really never going to be that stable. And that's by design. It's not totally the fault of the people.
And I would add, Djibouti is home to American bases, Chinese bases, French bases. I think the British have bases there and a couple other countries. There's a load of bases in Djibouti itself.
Yeah, it's 7 or 9 different countries are in Djibouti. Djibouti is basically, and we've deployed there. It looks like Ready Player One, if you've ever seen that Ready Player One. It's a total dystopia. It should not be, it's not a functioning country. And this is, again, no fault of the people. It's because it's just a CIA, yeah, exactly, Chai. It's just a CIA-ran country. It's just a base.
It's
horrible. So again, looking at the geography, so we see that Somaliland is up in the top part of this V, and then you have Somalia in the bottom lower half. And then in that middle part of the V where the acute angle is, that's an area called Puntland. So this is how unstable or unstable this area is. Inside of Somaliland, we have that whole area is trisected into thirds with three different tribes arguing over it. So nobody even knows what part of Somaliland is recognized. And if all of it is recognized, it's really just absolute madness. Obviously, the streets exploded in celebration in Somaliland and in protest in Mogadishu with Palestinian flags. But I want you guys to understand, what did he say on that video? I'm really looking forward to bringing you into the Abraham Accords.
Yep. And to welcome you where?
Jerusalem. Because that's where your embassy will be, I'm sure, right? So, and again, I was talking about this prior to the stream. Bibi's saying, you don't want to play along? F you, I'll find your separatists and I'll make a country and I'll make them, then they'll play along. This is their reward for playing along. You say, what are they playing along with? Well, they'll do all of the things that's required of the Abraham Accords, the Isaac Accords, moving the embassy, making sure that they're very Zionistic in nature inside of the country. And what else? Go back and look at headlines from March.
Yep.
Somaliland does not rule out absorption of Gazan residents. And from the Wikipedia, Israel and the United States were interested in resettling the Gazans to either Syria, Sudan, Morocco, or the separatist Somali regions of Puntland and Somaliland. Puntland and Somaliland expressed willingness to enter discussions on the matter in exchange for diplomatic recognition. And I'm sure that in exchange for diplomatic recognition, you will have to move your embassy to Jerusalem and join the Abraham Accords. Again, look at the geography.
Yes, Somaliland is an African Kosovo. Correct. Artificially carved out of Somalia without anyone's permission, except yes.
So what comes next then? This is not done. There's probably going to be conflict that comes from this, which again harkens back to the sectarian violence in Syria and the Yunnan plan. This is all features. These are features. These are not bugs. These are not oopsies. Bibi is saying, I will come in and I'll just start wars until I can make states that undermine the UN. And then those states will join my Abraham Accords. And as I was talking to this person prior, I was like, who's going to argue? The United States did this exact thing after World War II and after the Balkan Wars.
For sure.
Russia did the same thing after World War II and the creation of the USSR. So who can argue? Who could stop this? Maybe China?
I don't think so.
Right. So who can stop them from recognizing states? We already know that they've recognized the sovereignty of Morocco over Western Sahara, which is something that the UN does not recognize, and that is a direct affront to Algeria and Russia. So they'll just continuously find these different, and this is an exact method that the United States, the Anglosphere, employed after World War II. It was an official foreign policy where they started saying, separatists, everyone deserves a self-determination. It wasn't because they were humanitarians. It was because these kids stir up conflict. So everybody got self-determination. The Kosovars that don't exist. Like all of these people, the Taiwanese were supposed to get self-determined. Everybody needs self-determination, but that was to create.
Tibet, Xinjiang, Inner Mongolia, whatever you want.
Tibet, another one. Yes, exactly. And that's all this is. And Bibi's just ripping a page right out of our playbook. So how can we say anything about it? This is what we did. We did this with Kosovo.
Yep. Yep, it's true.
So, and then we have the Gazans potentially moving over there, a total tit for tat. So what's the reaction from the Muslim world? Not good. The Arab League and the GCC all collectively slammed it together, but it seems that the UAE is on board. So you have the UAE definitely in with the Zionists, but kind of not being too overly about it. But what's really next on the menu is Yemen.
Yep.
Oh, here Yemen, you come.
Yemen is always on the agenda.
We discussed a lot of things. As you know, I had an excellent phone call with President Putin that lasted for over 2 hours. We discussed a lot of points, and I do think we're getting a lot closer, maybe very close. The president and I just spoke to the European leaders. They were President Emmanuel Macron of France, President Alexander Stubb of the Republic of Finland, President Karol Nowacki of the Republic of Poland, Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre of the Kingdom of Norway, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni of the Italian Republic, Prime Minister Keir Starmer of the United Kingdom, of Britain and Northern Ireland, Chancellor Friedrich Merz, the Federal Republic of Germany, Secretary General Mark Rutte, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, President Ursula von der Leyen of the European Commission. We spoke to all of those great leaders. They're all great leaders. And we had a great talk with them after we were completed. We thought it was appropriate to speak with them. And our meeting was excellent. We covered, somebody would say 95%. I don't know what percent, but we have made a lot of progress on ending that war, which is really certainly the most deadly war since World War II, probably the biggest war since World War II. And I want to thank Steve Witkoff, who's here, and I'd like to thank Jared, who's here someplace. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Steve. What a great job you've done. Jared Kushner, Steve Witkoff, and Marco Rubio is here. Thank you, Marco. And Pete Hegseth is here. Those two people are doing an unbelievable job. And the four people on this one are doing, I don't think anybody could do it. We'll see if it gets done, but it's very close, certainly. Nobody would even have a chance of getting it to where it is right now. Nobody would have thought that was possible. So I just want to say we've done very well. We've had discussions on just about every subject, and that includes with President Putin before. And
why does he keep mentioning Putin?
Detail, and we likewise went into great detail today.
No, thank Putin.
And it was an honor to have you at Mar-a-Lago and have lunch. I hope you enjoyed the food. Your people enjoy the food. I can tell you that. Your big, strong people. Your general over there looks like central casting. I want to also, by the way, speaking of generals, we have a great general, General Raisin Kane, who is here someplace. Thank you, General. Thank you very much. He's great. So, Mr. President, maybe you want to say a few words, and then we'll speak over the next couple of weeks. We'll speak probably quite a bit.
Trump has nothing to say.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Thank you. Thank you for everything, dear colleagues. First of all, I would like to thank President Trump for a great meeting at this amazing place in his home in Mar-a-Lago. And we had a really great discussions on all the topics. And we appreciate the progress that was made by American and Ukrainian teams in these recent weeks. Special thanks to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. And thank you to for their engagement and full commitment, and also to our team. And first of all, to Rustem Umerov and General Gnatov, and to all our teams. And we discussed all the aspects of the peace framework, which includes, and we have great achievements, 20-point peace plan, 90% agreed, and U.S.-Ukraine security guarantees, 100% agreed. U.S.-Europe-Ukraine security guarantees, almost agreed. Military dimension, 100% agreed. Prosperity plan being finalized, and we also discussed the sequencing of the following actions. And we agree that security guarantees is a key milestone in achieving lasting peace, and our teams will continue working on all aspects. We also had a joint productive call with European leaders, like President Trump said already, and a lot of leaders, including NATO and the EU. And we agreed that our teams will meet in upcoming weeks to finalize all discussed matters. And we agreed with President Trump that he will host us, and maybe in Washington, European leaders and Ukrainian delegation, yes, in January. And Ukraine is ready for peace. And once again, would like to thank President Trump for a warm welcome and substantial discussion. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. President.
Any questions, please?
That's it.
The U.S. Ukraine security guarantees, what number are we at?
Well, I think you can say 95%, but I don't like to say percentages. I just think we're doing very well. We're very we could be very close. There are one or two very thorny issues, very tough.
Is it an Article 5 type guarantee?
Well, we made a lot of progress today, but really we've made it over the last month. This is not a one-day process deal.
Now we can settle. It's been a year.
I think when the president says 95, I think, you know, could be close to 95%. Yeah, please, in behind you.
Do you agree on the so-called free trade zone on Donbass? How to separate the sites? How to make the separation line as soon as possible?
The word agreed is too strong. I would say not agreed, but we're getting closer to an agreement on that, and that's the big issue.
We're getting closer because the battlefield is moving.
I think we're closer than we were probably. One, it's unresolved, but it's getting a lot closer. That's a very tough issue.
Thanks to the Russian army. That
I think will get resolved. Yeah, please. Well, what was the issue? You have to tell me. What did they say? Well, that's what they've been asking for. And, you know, there's a dispute about that. So they're going to have to iron that out. That's an issue they have to iron out. But I think it's moving in the right direction. If something doesn't happen? You mean if something doesn't happen? Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead. You're going to finish your question. Well, we'll see. Look, we'll see. But I don't want to talk about that because I think we're getting pretty close. Yes, please. Please.
No, we spoke about 20 points plan, and I'm happy that really our teams very close to results. And I agree with President Trump that our teams work not one day, not one week, more than 1 month, beginning from Geneva, then two meetings in Miami, then we had Berlin, and now we have Mar-a-Lago. So this is a very difficult question. You know our position. So it's, we have to respect our law and our people. We respect the territory which we control. And of course, our attitude is very clear. That's why President Trump said this is a very tough question. And of course, we have with Russians different positions on it. No, when we speak about referendum, we spoke that it's one of the key. We can have referendum on any kind of points of this plan. I said that we can use referendum.
We have 20 referendums.
Or we cannot use referendum. It's one of the key. We can use, this possibility of parliament to vote according to the law or to have referendum. Doesn't matter. This referendum, if the plan will be very difficult for our society, very difficult. Of course, our society has to choose and has to vote because it's their land, the land not of one person, it's the land of our nation for a lot of generations.
They'll probably have to get their plan approved by parliament or by referendum of the people. You would think that they want, I know they had a poll that it's 91% in favor of ending this war. So,
Which way?
When Russia wants it ended, everybody wants it ended. So
yeah, which way?
I want it ended because I don't want to see so many people dying. We're losing.
Maybe you should stop supplying them, arming them.
By far since World War II. So we want to see it ended. Absolutely.
Stop giving them intelligence, you fuck.
You said at the top that you would be trying to speak again tomorrow. Is that correct?
I might. It depends on what happens tomorrow. If there's an additional something to add, otherwise there's no reason to. We're in the process. Jared and Steve are working very hard to get something done. And if there's something that comes up, I'd speak. But otherwise, I don't think there's any reason to.
In your mind, sir, what are the thorniest issues still unresolved after the deficit?
Well, I think the land you're talking about, some of that land has been taken. Some of that land is maybe up for grabs, but it may be taken over the next period of a number of months. And are you better off making a deal now? Look, let me tell you, they have been very brave. They fought very hard and continue to fight very hard and do tremendous damage. But Russia would like to see it end, and Ukraine would like to see it. And I think it's time to end. And a lot of very brave people, a lot of people that are dead right now, unfortunately, because I've said, and nobody's disputed it,
that
if the election weren't rigged and stolen, 2020, you wouldn't have had this war. It would have never happened. And it didn't happen.
No, no. You armed them and funded them from 2017 to 2020. Don't lie.
And I spoke with President Putin. I got along with him very well, despite the Russia hoax, which was a total hoax. He used to say, what is going on over there? But it was a total hoax, as he knew and as I knew. But
you're
I
a hoax. And we killed people in the Donbass.
Ukraine. I've said it before. It was the apple of his eye. But he wasn't going to do anything about it. He didn't do anything about it until I was gone. And then a lot of really bad statements were made by people. By a lot of people, I guess. But by a certain president that we had who was a disaster. Yes.
Do you anticipate going to Ukraine if you can get through an agreement? And
I'd have no problem with doing it. You know, I have no problem with doing it. We don't anticipate it. Would like to get the deal done and not necessarily have to go. I've offered to go and speak to their parliament. And help. I don't know.
What is that going to do?
Probably help.
He spoke to the Knesset. Maybe he could bring Miriam Adelson.
Yeah, no, I know. So I'm not sure that it would be really necessary. But if it would help save 25,000 lives a month or whatever it may be, I would certainly be willing to do that. Yeah, please. No, behind you.
His makeup looks good today.
Are you, where are you from?
Maybe he didn't have
good,
McDonald's.
I had a feeling.
Or Burger King.
Good. On what? Yeah, we discussed that at length today. As you know, it's in pretty good shape. It can start up immediately, almost immediately. And it's one of the things I discussed with President Putin. And they were talking about the nuclear plant that's probably the biggest in the world, just about the biggest anywhere in the world. Can you believe that? And President Putin's actually working with Ukraine on getting it open. He's been very good in that sense. He wants to see that open. And he hasn't hit it with missiles, hasn't hit it with anything. It's a big danger to do that for everybody. But they're working together to try and get it. It can open very quickly. It's in pretty good shape. And the people there have been there for years. The people there running it. You know, they have 5,000 people in that plant. Can you believe it? I learned that today. 5,000 people. It's the biggest plant of its kind in the world.
The Soviets!
And they're working together to get it open. They could maybe get it open quickly. That's a big step when he's not bombing that plant. It's a big step.
You in the readout from Moscow, they talked about the creation of some working groups.
Yes.
Can you tell us about what those working groups
sure.
entail? And also, if you wouldn't mind, what is the message that you will give to Putin when you speak to him after your meeting?
So the working group is going to be composed of Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, General Raisin Kane, Marco Rubio, and a few other people that we're going to be
Larry Fink
putting onto it. I think Pete Hegseth should be in that working group. He knows the territory very well. He's been fantastic at what he's doing. And they may add one or two people. And likewise, Ukraine's going to have some very good people that were at lunch today that enjoyed the lunch today a lot, more than they thought, right? But
who was at lunch?
Who may be on your working group?
We got to find out who was at lunch.
I want to know.
That we work with Steve and Jared. We worked and worked our Rustam Umerov and also Deputy Minister Kislytsa and also General Gnatov, and they will continue work in this group. And of course, if we will go further, and I hope that really we will have decisions in January, as I said, about all these documents, six documents. And of course, we will continue work on this so they know what to do. Yes.
And that working group, by the way, importantly, will also then be working with Russia. Okay? Because to work with ourselves doesn't really solve much of a problem. So they'll be working with Russia. Yeah, please.
This morning you weren't a deadline guy. How long do you think it'll take to get this last little bit, as you say, finished? What are we talking
about? So if it went really well, you know, maybe a few weeks. And if it went poorly longer, and if it went really poorly, it's not going to happen. That would be a shame. There's that chance also. You know, it's possible it doesn't happen. But, you know, in a few weeks we will know one way or the other, I think. But if it went really well, but it could also go poorly. I mean, you know, we could have something where one item that you're not thinking about is a big item and it breaks it up. Look, it's been a very difficult negotiation, very detailed It's funny, I settled 8 wars. Some were going on for 35 years.
Palin and Kapunia just got again.
He ended the Kosovo.
One was going on for 37 years. I settled it in one
day. Azerbaijan.
But this is a very complex one.
No,
I think we'll get it done. I don't want to say when, but I think we're going to get it done. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, maybe 2028. You suggested a trilateral meeting between both President Putin and Zelensky.
Right.
Is that something that is also on the docket?
I see that happening, sure, at the right time. I saw a very interesting President Putin today. I mean, he wants to see it happen. He wants to see it. He told me very strongly. I believe him. Don't forget, we went through the Russia hoax together. And he'd call me, I'd call him, I'd say, can you believe the stuff that they're making up? And it turned out we were right. They made it all up. And despite that, we didn't get into wars and we didn't get into problems, but we weren't able to trade very much or any of that, which was a shame because, you know, a lot of success could have been had by trading with Russia. They have great land, great minerals.
Didn't you put sanctions on them?
We have things that they want very badly.
How many sanctions did you put on Russia?
Which was
you did it.
A terrible made up fictional thing by Crooked Hillary and by Adam.
He did it. He's saying we could trade.
Made it was all a made up hoax. But it kept us really from dealing with Russia, kept Russia dealing, you know, from dealing with us. So but despite that, we got along. And
Zelensky's not happy.
I think we're going to get there. I know him very well. I think we're going to get there.
Discuss any time, location, meeting place?
Yeah, we're discussing a lot of things. No, look, I was on the phone with him for almost, I guess, 2.5 hours. They're just telling me now. It's a long time. We discussed a lot of things. We didn't talk about the weather. We weren't talking about what a beautiful day it is in Palm Beach, Florida. Yes.
Trump, President Zelensky mentioned maybe a meeting with European leaders back in Washington. Would that be in the next few weeks?
Well, in Washington or someplace, yeah. These leaders that I just read, these are great people. You know, they've spent a lot of money on helping Ukraine. And look, they're doing it for themselves also, meaning their country. Ukraine's a very important country for them in particular. For us, it's very important. To me, it's the lives. You know, we're thousands and thousands of miles. We're protected by a thing called the Atlantic Ocean and lots of other places, to be honest. And they're not, you know, they're right there. But we're working together with them as we should be. But I'm doing it to save lives. You know, we're not spending any money. Biden gave $350 million away. And the president was nice enough to give us a contract to take out rare earth and things. So we'll see what
happens. Oh, thanks very much.
We have a
thanks.
Contract, but we appreciated that. It was very good. But we'll see how that works out. But if you think about it, I really believe we're probably, Mr. President, by far closer than ever before.
Yeah.
With both parties.
Closer than ever before.
We had sometimes when he was close and President Putin wasn't. Then when President Putin was close and he wasn't. You saw that in the White House. but I think they both want to see it happen.
In your conversation with...
Can somebody just ask if Zelensky's going to talk to Bibi? These journalists are worthless. Yeah.
They are worthless. We should be there.
I know. It's like Laura Loomer.
Well, look, I mean, the message is so obvious. It's what a shame. They died in a country, a foreign country. And some are celebrated people. They're very celebrated. But so sad that a thing like that would happen. Yes, ma'am.
Obviously, security is a major issue for the Ukrainians.
Right.
Did you offer any promises, any assurances today?
I did. We want to work with Europe, and Europe is going to take over a big part of it, as you can imagine. You know, they're right there. But we're going to help Europe 100%, like they'd help us. Yes, ma'am. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, when you're talking
to... Who are you with?
Andrea Shalal with Reuters.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So in your conversation with President Putin, did you discuss what responsibility Russia will have for any kind of reconstruction of Ukraine post an agreement?
I did. They're going to be helping. Russia's going to be
but
helping.
Israel won't
Russia
be dropping a dime
Ukraine
on Gaza.
Succeed. Once it sounds a little strange, but I was explaining to the president, President Putin was very generous in his feeling toward Ukraine succeeding, including supplying energy, electricity, and other things at very low prices.
Yeah, for the Russians.
A lot of good things came out of that. But they were in the works for 2 weeks.
Smorgasbord for all of Ukraine.
Marco and everybody.
Did Russia agree or did Putin agree to a ceasefire to allow a referendum to take
place?
Are these people serious? He offers a ceasefire.
That's one of the points.
They're always declined.
No, not a ceasefire. He feels that, look, you know, they're fighting and to stop. And then if they have to start again, which is a possibility, he doesn't want to be in that position. I understand that position. The president feels strongly about that or something.
Look at
Zelensky.
But
I think we're finding ways that we can get around that. But I understand President Putin from that standpoint. You know, you have to understand the other side. And, you know, I'm on the side of peace. I'm on the side of stopping the war. So, but I think that's a problem that's going to get solved. Yeah.
Would people who live outside of Ukrainians who fled during the war be allowed to participate in the referendum?
What do you mean, people where I live?
The people that left.
So
we
have, if we speak about the people who are abroad, who are not on the territory of Ukraine, you mean that in Poland, in Germany, we have millions of people. Yeah, they have a referendum in the same of elections. The same way how people come and vote, they have rights for this. And of course, they have to come. That's why if we will come to referendum, yes, if we will come to such decision, people need infrastructure for this. And it's not simple. And that's why we spoke about it. It can't be in one day, very quickly. It's difficult because
they don't have the money to hold elections. How are they going to hold 20 referendums?
In Europe, mostly in Europe.
If a referendum is held, they got to take all the votes from here. Ukrainians are going to Russia.
What happens in a few weeks if things sputter? What are you prepared to do?
They keep fighting and they keep dying. No good.
There it is.
Keep fighting and they keep dying. And we don't want that to happen. He doesn't want it to happen. President Putin doesn't want it to happen either. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate you. We appreciate you arming and funding the Ukrainian regime since 2017. Thanks very much. Since January 2017. Don't forget it. It wasn't only the Democrats. And I might add, you can find this video. If you want to see, go on my Twitter, search. On my Twitter, I confronted Tulsi Gabbard during the 2020 presidential campaign. I confronted her and asked her point blank. I thanked her for her support of Syria, but I asked her point blank, do you support giving weapons to the Ukrainian fascist regime? She said, yes, I support defensive weapons. It's there. Get the video. Make it go viral again. Because
okay.
Yours only asked 5 years ago, I asked. 5 years ago. Because I stood with the Donbass and Crimea since 2014. Wallah, I've been with Russia since the beginning.
Wallah.
Absolutely.
We'll clip that. You even pulled out the Shahada finger. We're going to clip
that. Listen, I'm telling you, these people are unbelievable. Trump, you can go and see my covert action articles. Trump was not only arming and funding Ukrainian regime. They were doing joint NATO military exercises in the Black Sea in 2018-19. Please.
Operation Something
Don't be in the United States of Amnesia. Open your minds. It's all baloney.
Open your mind. And I won't go back. Well, what we were talking about before, just to recap or sum that up, is that Israel would love nothing more than to split Yemen in half. And the southern side has already said if they get recognition, they will immediately join the Abraham Accords. So again, this is Israel taking a page out of our own playbook. I'll make countries then and I'll put them on my side.
Yeah.
And somebody mentioned Pax Judaica and put the Ukrainian and Israeli flag. I think that's important because we mentioned before we got into the press conference, Timur Mindich has already fled to Israel and has been welcomed with open arms. He's on the beach. He's on vacation. So it's somebody, thank you for reading and your compliment on it. I did do a piece on it's from Gaza to Donbass. It's not about like shitlibby stuff. It's actually about the historical and the real ties between Israel and the Ukraine. And they don't care if Ukrainians live or die. It's just part of this sort of globalist
Pax Judaica, if they can absorb NATO into that sort of thing, then that helps too. So yeah, I highly recommend the article. It's on our Substack. So thanks so much for reading it. And thanks for your compliment. I loved that. That was my favorite thing that I've written, I think. That one and the evangelical mercenaries. It's pretty great, but I think we'll wrap here since we've been through the ringer today, and I'm always so exhausted after Trump like mind fucks me for a little bit. So yeah, but so we'll get some super chats. Let's see. Yes, if you guys want to translate anything, even the Substack articles, go for it into any language. Just link it back to the original. We don't care. We just want the information out there. I get emails all the time. And guys, I am shit at, we'll talk about this too. I'm shit at checking the email. So people will email me and I get to it 2 weeks later and the article might not even be relevant anymore. So just take That's what true. You want. If it's not behind a paywall, it's yours to do what you want with it and just credit us, whatever. Thank you so much for joining our YouTube. Guys, think about just joining the members. We're figuring out how to like make it like incentivized. I'm guessing like merch, maybe. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Maybe all suggestions are welcome. Thank you, Will, for always supporting. Why is the UK going after Christians? They're going after Orthodox Christians and Catholics. That's very important. It's an important distinction because they Catholics and Orthodox do not go along with the Zionist line. Nope. You can get some Western Catholics to go along with it. But if you guys notice, the more Catholic states, i.e. Italy, Spain, and France, have been more antagonistic towards Israel in the term. And Catholic is also, Slovenia is a Catholic country. They've also been antagonistic towards Israel. So that's the Israel does not like Catholics. They historically have not gotten along with the Pope or the Vatican. And there's always that a Jerusalem versus Rome thing in the back of their minds. So that plays.
Except for the Catholics in Lebanon.
Lebanon, the Maronites.
Yeah. Maronites.
Yeah, that's not the same. They're not.
That's not the same. It's a tactical alliance anyway.
Link, thank you so much for tuning in. Trump, I'm not allowed to say the R word. I only get 3 strikes an episode. So
we have some strikes this episode. We have some strikes.
I don't know. So I'm not going to say the R word, but as a Texan man, I'm on Russia's side. You know what? So many Texans are in Russia. So I know my Texans went over to the Donbass quite a few times.
Absolutely. Now. Absolutely. Rest in peace, my good comrade, Russell Bentley.
MAGA is so cooked. I don't know that it's just MAGA that's cooked. Cheers, Sarah and Chris and chat. And we love you too, Nathaniel. And thank you so much for all of your hard work on the spaces and the book club. Guys, this is a collab. This is a group effort. It's a communal effort. The educating multipolarity, anti-imperialism. It is a communal effort and is often thankless. But if you are interested in helping, please get involved. I really need help editing the Substack and editing video. So if that's like you want to get into like writing and publishing on our Substack, I have a ton. Like I have articles in the email that are like, I would love to have this published. And I'm like, I would love to have someone edit this. But not me. So if anybody's interested in that, like that would be really amazing. Email us at ddgeopolitics@proton.me. I think I hear it as ddgeopolitics@proton.me. But other than that, I think we'll see you guys twice on Wednesday for special New Year's edition episodes. We'll see what happens. And other than that, that's all I have.
Get ready. Happy New Year, early New Year's, if I don't see you. And of course, stay safe, stay healthy, and keep your minds open and sharp.
Thank you guys so much. We surpassed 41,000 on YouTube. Whoop, whoop. DDG in control. All right,
That's
guys.
It.
We'll see you on Wednesday. Come find us in the spaces. Bye.